Well, I have some books that I read, and I'm going to try to go through them very quickly. Two of them are on Bookshare. The one is called The Island, and it's by Adrian McInty, M-C, capital I-N-T-Y. And I got this from Bookshare, and there's a lot of violence to the point of almost revulsion. You almost want to stop reading it. It's about a family who are, this doctor marries this young woman. He has two children. He's looking for somebody to help him care for the kids. So they're just starting to get to know each other. They're teenagers. They don't like their new stepmom. They can't stand her. They think she's dumb, and they think they know more than she does. And so they decide that they're going to take a trip, and they decide to go to this island, and they end up making a very bad choice because this island is populated with very weird, cruel people. And their aim is to keep anybody that happens to come to the island on the island. This family just goes for a vacation, and they are shocked. They are terribly treated, just terribly. And it's an extremely good book. And if you've ever read any of Adrian McInty's work, he is spellbinding, even with the violence, which is so unbelievable. The books are fantastic that he's written. I had spoken about a book several years ago called The Chain, which is maybe better than The Island. My second book is called Blind Tiger. It's by Sandra Brown. It doesn't have anything to do with blindness or about tigers. It's about how prohibition tears a town apart. The people are trying to abide by the law, but others that need to run stills have to make a living, and that's what they do. And it's extremely good. It's also from Bookshare, and it's really an excellent read. The third book that I want to mention is called Suspect Number One, The Lindbergh Kidnapping, The Man Who Got Away, by Lisa Perlman. It's unbarred. It's 19 hours and 10 minutes. I have 3 hours to go. It is a spellbinding book about this evil, evil man, Charles Lindbergh, who everybody thought was so wonderful. And basically, it's about how he kidnapped his son because his son was, he was jealous of the baby, and he believed in eugenics, which meant that if a person wasn't white and wasn't perfect, then they should be eliminated. And his son was born with a large head, and it was a little misshapen. And Lindy really wanted all the publicity for himself and did not want to admit that this baby had anything wrong with him. And he had a whole thing where he set up this kidnapping thing, and they also killed the baby and did vivisection on this poor child, which means that they, and even as he was still alive, they were removing his organs. And it is just...
Joni, is this a fictionalized version or is this nonfiction?
Well, this is nonfiction.
Oh.
And I don't have the number, but it's so gripping. And if you like courtroom drama and all kinds of stuff, a lot of the book, it's very confusing because they get into real details. And the crime was blamed on this poor German immigrant. And all along, it was this fantastic pilot that everybody admired, and he was anti-Semitic and hated blacks and hated everyone that wasn't a white, perfect specimen. So that's enough from me. Maybe somebody could try to find the book number. I couldn't find it. It's Lisa Perlman, but I'm not sure how to spell her name because I didn't get to the end of the book yet. And the book is called Suspect Number One, The Lindbergh Kidnapping, The Man Who Got Away.
Okay. Thanks, Joni. I'm going to call on people if that's okay with you. And I want to second Blind Tiger by Sandra Brown. That was an excellent book. And Blind Tiger was a name for a speakeasy back in the day. So... as you can imagine, there were lots of speakeasies during Prohibition. So, all right, let's see. Jenny from San Diego.
Hi, Jenny.
Sorry, I'm unmuting myself. Yes, I have a book that... The title of the book is Can't Look Away, and it recently came on Bard. And it is a romance book. Somehow I was in the mood for a romance book. I also feel that you could call this romantic suspense. There are, I think, three or four different narrators. And the initial premise of the book is kind of a triangle. There is a rock star, and he develops a relationship with one of the people that hear him at a concert, and they have a very good relationship. And then there's a third element, a woman who becomes obsessed by the rock star and tries to intrude. Now, what I like about the book is I love suspense, but not... As I get older, I less and less want to see violence. The suspense comes from the book's unfolding of what happens to the relationship and to the schemes of this third party. And when you read the book, it's important to know that the book will develop kind of like from different points of view. And so... You know, you think, well, wait a minute, did I miss something? No, it's the plots unfolding gradually. And so I really enjoyed it. I would probably say most people would categorize this as a version of Chick Lit. I don't know. I just really liked it, and I'm not sure what other people might think. But it is the DB, again, the title is Can't Look Away. And the DB number is 108-684. And that's basically the only book I have right now.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny.
Okay. David Fauché.
All right. The book I have is an older one. The DB number is 24868. And as you would expect from a number such as that, it was originally recorded on cassette, and it does have slightly less than perfect audio quality, which is just one of those things you have to deal with when you want to revisit an old friend. The book is entitled To the Ends of the Earth. It's by Australian writer, I think he's no longer with us, Michael Talbot, T-A-L-B-O-T. And again, the DB number is 24868. The book runs over I think over 25 or 27 hours, memory escapes me. Norman Borris does an excellent job of narrating this historic fiction's adventure. You learn of the a cast of characters who were on the 11 ships that have been sent to explore and claim Botany Bay and Australia for Great Britain. The year is 1787, and the book takes you through the different kinds of people, the different people who were sent. You could be sent there for stealing a candlestick, or for for stealing a loaf of bread to stay alive. They were really hard on people then. There was this elaborate system, apparently, in 18th century London of thief takers and thief families who had this elaborate understanding of who would be taken, who would be robbed, how they would handle it. And when soldiers came back from the American Revolution, many of them were looking for work, and they would get into this line of work and mess up the whole gang system. So there are some of those characters on board the ships. There is a Eastern European Jewish person who was in London, and he was a quack doctor, and he is on board one of the ships. You have a young clergyman and his wife on the ship. You have the head of the whole expedition, Arthur Phillip, who is an interesting character in and of himself. The book starts in London. It goes next to the Canary Islands, then to Rio de Janeiro, then to Cape Town, and finally they make it to Botany Bay, Australia. And it tells you the different happenings on board the different ships, how the convicts are trying to survive, and how they interact with one another, and how the officer class interacts with each other and with the convicts. Like I said, it's very well narrated by Norman Borris in a very sort of understated British accent that I've grown to like. He's no longer with us, but there are several books of his narration that stand out in my mind, including the autobiography of Henry VIII with notes by his fool Will Sommer, which is a whole nother book. We won't get into that right now. So I strongly recommend To the Ends of the Earth by Michael Talbot, DB24868. If you want a long sort of escapist historical novel that is factually accurate.
Right.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it does sound good. Thanks, David.
Thank you, David.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that one out. Okay.
Yeah,
yeah, that sounds good.
Jana Luttrell.
Okay, Alan Limley, I'm up. Okay, yep. My book is called Find Me by Anne Fraser, Fraser, and it's DB105247. I guess I had a twisted mind when I read this book. It was about a serial killer who uses his young daughter as a decoy. So she acts like she's lost, and she finds young girls and asks them to help her find her mother because she's lost. And then she leads them to her father, who ends up killing them. She then has to go. She does not witness the actual killings because she has instructions to go back to the car as soon as she leads the victims to their father. So her father gets arrested and goes to prison. And the day before he is to die, he says, okay, I'll tell you where the bodies are buried, but I want my daughter to go with me. And by that time, her daughter works for the FBI. And so they reluctantly let that happen, and they meet each other for the first time in many years. And then crazy things start happening. And let's see, I don't want to give anything away, but you do get some surprises in the book. It starts out really fast paced, and I think it kind of slows down in the middle of the book. But then at the end, it picks up again and you do get some surprises. It is, as you can imagine, violent. So if you don't like violence, this would really not be the book for you. I would say it was a pretty good book. I wouldn't call it great, but it was pretty good.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does when the father is using the daughter as bait, does she realize that he's killing these girls or not?
No, she doesn't. Okay. She's only five or six. So she doesn't know what's going on till later.
Okay. That's what I figured. Okay. Well, that's at least good to know. But anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Joni, comments?
Oh, it sounds so good. I want to read that too.
Yeah, it sounds like Joni's kind of book. Yes.
It does. Joni and I should have our own book group.
So, okay. All right. Is that all you have?
Okay, you started me well.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Sherry Wells.
Hello, everybody. I've got two I'll do quickly, and I love both of them. I did write about these on DB Review, so I apologize to those who this will be a repetition. The first one is called In an Instant, and it's by Suzanne Redfern, R-E-D-F-E-A-R-N. The DB number is 106111, and I'll repeat that when I'm done. This is a fantastic book. There were 11 people in a big vehicle going on vacation in the mountains, and they crash through a fence and go down the side of the mountain. And I'm not giving anything away. That happens in the first hour. And the 16-year-old girl in the front seat is immediately killed, and she's the narrator of the book. And it's not meant to be supernatural. It's just a gimmick because she can follow everyone and see what's going on with people. And she narrates the book. And it's about how these people behave after the accident, because they're not rescued until a day or so later. And some people behave selfishly and badly. There's nothing melodramatic like cannibalism or anything, so nothing like that. But still, some people don't behave well. But then later in the book, after the fact, marriages are affected. Some people had severe frostbite and lost fingers and things. And it's how the accident affected them, and how their own behavior affected them, and how others' behavior affected them. And it's what I liked about it was complex. What people do, sometimes you think, oh gosh, that's awful. And then later when the narrator's describing what they're thinking, it's kind of like, well, maybe that wasn't so bad. So it's really a good book. It's about 10 and a half hours long. Again, it's called In an Instant by Suzanne Redfern, R-E-D-F-E-A-R-N, DB 106-111. The second one I have is War Stories by Gordon Corman, M-A-N. The DB number is 107064. This book's only a little over 6 hours. And after I read it, I saw that it was for grades 4 to 7. It does not read like a kid book. There are three characters in here, main characters. Trevor, a 12-year-old boy who loves everything World War II, video games, posters. His great-grandfather, Jacob, who was a World War II veteran, and he's always telling war stories and stuff, and they just have a really good relationship. And then in between them is the grandfather, Jacob's son Daniel, who's always trying to say, war isn't that glorious, he doesn't want his son to learn that. Well, Jacob gets invited to France for the 75th anniversary of VE Day, and so they're all really excited to go, especially Trevor, because he gets to see all his grandfather's haunts. And then the book starts switching between chapters back in time when 17-year-old Jacob enlisted in the war, lied about his age and his experiences. And there's not battle scenes here so much as the day-to-day things that happen when you're a soldier, digging foxholes, terrible food, closeness of relationships with his friends. And he does have some friends die. And for the 75th anniversary, he's the last one left in his unit that helped liberate this village that he's been invited to. But there starts appearing on Facebook some messages that indicate that some people don't really want him to come back and are not thrilled about this whole thing. And when the family gets there, their tires get slashed and some other things. And it turns out something happened that's not awful and violent, but it was sad and bad, and some people hold it against him. And the ending is just so poignant. I found myself in tears at the ending. It's very moving and very poignant. Not sad exactly, just really, really moving. So I highly recommend this. Again, it's War Stories by Gordon Corman, O-R-M-A-N, yeah. And it's DB 107-64. 107064. And again, it's just a little over 6 hours. And that's it.
Thank you, Sherry. You know, it's so good that you said that this book doesn't have battles, because as you, everybody knows, you know, it's weird with me because I don't mind violence so much, but I don't like battles and shooting and killing. And
well, it's, people do die and they do talk about battles, but they don't go into all this detail about who was where and who was, you know, there's no battle scenes per se, which I appreciated also.
Good.
It does look good.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Sherry. Sure.
Yeah. Michelle Bernstein.
Okay. So for a book club, I read a book and I really didn't think I was going to like it, although I do like behind the scenes looks at like theater and movies, but this was a behind the scenes look of the making of the film The Godfather, which is a movie I've seen. I've seen all the three movies, but you know, it's not one of my favorites. So this is called Leave the Gun, Take the Cannoli. And the author is Mark Seal, S-E-A-L, and it is on Bard. The Bard number is 106586. It's about 15 hours, and it was so engrossing from start to finish because it was just a crazy story of how this movie got made. It starts out with Mario Puzo, who wrote, you know, the book The Godfather, and his life was chaotic, to say the least, and it talks about him. And then it goes over to the Paramount studio, which was run by Bob Evans, who was a pretty colorful character. And then they bring in Francis Ford Coppola, who was not, you know, a big director at the time. He was like a little director. And he had this vision for The Godfather, which was so different from all the other gangster movies they had made before. First of all, he wanted to have Italian-American actors, which they usually didn't have, playing Italian-American characters. And also, this was not just a violent movie. This was a story, you know, I'm sure many of you have seen The Godfather, which, you know, kind of romanticized the whole violence, you know, bringing in a lot of family aspects. So it was very, very interesting. You know, you get to hear about all the people who were cast in the movie, Al Pacino, Diane Keaton, James Caan, Robert Duvall, and of course Marlon Brando, most of whom, except for Marlon Brando, were not famous at the time, and how they got cast. And, you know, they originally wanted, for example, to have, instead of Al Pacino from Michael Corleone, they wanted Robert Redford, which would have been a very different movie. I can't even imagine that. So the title comes from a line. It's not the most famous line in the movie, but one of the lines in the movie. And it was really good. I just loved it. It was you know, even if you're not a big fan of The Godfather, it's just a really fascinating story. And then a book that I'm currently reading right now, which I started, I'm not too far into it, but I'm really liking it. Lately, I've been on like a romance kick, and I wasn't really a romance reader, but lately I've been reading like a ton of romances. This one's pretty good so far. It's called Mr. Perfect on Paper. So, of course, with that title, you would, of course, know that it's a romance. The author is Jean Meltzer, M-E-L-T-Z-E-R. I'm listening to the commercial version, which is read by Dara Rosenberg, who's a pretty good narrator. And it's the story of a woman, a third-generation matchmaker. And she has an app called, it sounds like, I guess, a J-Date, but it's called J-something else. It started out with her grandmother, who, you know, did the matches in person. And she has a really close relationship with her grandmother, you know, who lives right near her, who's not particularly well, who's a real character. And they get invited to go on a television show. And on the television show, the grandmother reveals, you know, this list. Like she says, well, you know, my granddaughter, she made this app, she's so successful. And but she has no match for herself. And so she pulls out this list that the main character and her sister had come up with, a list of, you know, what she really wants, what she's looking for, and she reads it aloud on the television show, and then it sort of goes from there. It's really good, actually. I'm really enjoying it. I'm a couple of hours into it. The author, I have not read her previous book. It's called The Matzah Ball, which I understand is a story about a Jewish romance writer who secretly writes Christmas stories, and then it sort of goes. So I think when I finish this, I might go read that one. So the books are Leave the Gun, Take the Cannoli by Mark Seal, and Mr. Perfect on Paper by Gene Meltzer. Thanks.
So
Thank you, Michelle. They sound really good.
Do they play Matchmaker from Fiddler on the Roof and Mr. Perfect on Paper or not?
There is a line so far from Fiddler on the Roof. Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, I'm Jewish, so of course I'm appreciating
right.
all these references and whatever.
Right,
but there is, but there's some pretty funny stuff in it so far.
I love that song, Matchmaker, from Fiddler on the Roof. That's one of my favorite mm-hmm. tunes from the movie. So,
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Let's see. John Bowyer, we're glad you came back. You got us a real book.
Oh, darn, John. Welcome back.
Hey, I am here. I have three books.
Whoa. Okay. Rock and roll.
However, if these were book reports for school, I would fail. But for Joni's Corner, they should suffice. The Hating Game by Sally Thorne, 2 volumes, 2, 3, 1, 3, 6. A story of two publishing companies merging and a couple from each company sitting across from each other and trying to outdo one another. Eventually things change and their interesting things take place. It is a good read and I enjoyed it very much. The next one is Redwood Bend by Robin Carr, 4 volumes, 2, 3, 2, 1, 1. This is another one of her Virgin River stories, and I've read a couple of them already. This is about a girl who loses her husband, who was an army decorated man, who unfortunately went to the battlefield too many times and was killed just before his twin sons were born. Her and her brother take care of the kids until an issue occurs and they have to split for a while. They eventually get back with each other, and in the process, she meets another man, moves away from him again. A lot more to the story, which I won't spoil. Another good read. And the last one, the one that I just finished, An American Marriage by Terry, T-A-Y-A-R-I, Jones, 22197, 4 volumes. This is a novel I would recommend to anyone. It is about blacks trying to make good, and they do, but in different ways. A couple gets married, and then things go wrong, and he ends up in prison for many years. He is finally released after 5 years and tries to go back to his wife. Much more to the story with various surprises. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, thank
Nicely
you, John.
Done.
And they sound like really good reads. Everything today has sounded like books that I just have to read, but I don't have any time because all I do is read. Okay, Alan, who's next?
Okay, Next is Deanna Noriega.
Oops, okay. I have no clue which ones I should talk about because I can't remember what I talked about the last time I was on because I missed a couple of times. But recent ones that I finished were a book called One to Watch, which is a fashion blogger who's a plus size gal gets talked into going onto a reality TV program where they bring out 25 men to find the true love of her life, you know, before the end of the season. And she only goes on it because she thinks it'll help her career as a fashion blogger because she doesn't believe in reality TV anyway. So it's got some humor in it and it's got some bizarre things, but it's basically talking about the fact that in the fashion industry, if you're not a size four, you're considered overweight. And this girl, you know, is definitely not a size four, but she likes dramatic clothes and she has a good time with her blog. And so gets caught up in this whole mess. So it's a romance. Then let's see, that one is by, Kate Stayman London. Stayman London is a dash, you know, hyphenated name. And it is DB10336. And if you like unusual romances, you might like this one. Then I think I shared with you about Free Water. That was one I read a little while ago. But I'm not sure. That one is a book about people living deep in the swamps during the Civil War time who are basically runaways and make their own community in the swamp and survive. And children are born there and raised there without ever seeing white people or leaving the swamps. And it's centered around some children, some that arrive on the island running away and some that were born there and how they unite to try to save the community from being discovered and, you know, being taken back into slavery. So that one was, if I can find it again, DB106684. And that's by Amina Luckman-Dawson. We have a lot of hyphenated. Amina is A-M-I-N-A. Luckman is L-U-Q-M-N-D-A-W-S-O-N. And it's one of those transition books that people could read if they were youth or adult because it's talking about history and about survival, basically.
Do you have the book number, Deanna?
For Freewater, yes. It is, let me find the card again. I just flipped it past it. But it is here in my stack of cards of books I've recently read. Okay, that one is 106684.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Nicely done. And remind us of your new guide's name.
Flynn.
Flynn. How's Flynn working out? Flynn's come along well?
Oh, yes. He's still a very lovely dog. Playful, sweet, affectionate, and a little bit of a goof. But that's just fine.
Oh, makes him fun, yeah.
What kind of dog?
He's a yellow lab.
Oh, good. Very thanks.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, he's...
Okay.
And for you, Ellen, I'm reading another Stephen Conkeley. It's a compilation of three of his books in the Alex Fletcher series. Remember telling you about Alex Fletcher books. With the one was the first one is about the pandemic, the Fletcher family,
right?
And then we're talking about some sort of huge national disaster in the book two, and it ends with him trying desperately to get to Boston to save his son and a neighbor child, and the wife taking off on the bicycle with all the women trying to get away from the next big invasion of people going nuts because it's the apocalypse sort of thing. And of course, Alex is fighting for his life and his kids and all that stuff. And that's why I knew that it was the kind of book that Ellen would like, because he's definitely a superhero type.
Yeah. I like those. They kick butt and saving the world. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And his last name is K-O-N-K-O-L-Y. And first name is Stephen, spelled with a V.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Deanna. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Thanks, Deanna.
Mary Ellen Earls.
All righty. The Kennedy debutante. And this is by Carrie, K-E-R-I, Mayer, M-A-H-E-R. The number is DB108271. And it beautifully portrays the social season in London in 1938, when Kathleen Kick Kennedy and her sister Rosemary are presented to the court of St. James very shortly after their father becomes the U.S. ambassador to Great Britain. It is set against the background of impending war when Hitler begins his march across Europe for Lebensraum. The romance of the nobleman Billy Cavendish and Kick Kennedy starts during a reception when she is introduced to him and flowers during this time. And a couple of years later, Joseph Kennedy is recalled to the United States because of his position against Franklin D. Roosevelt. And then Kathleen and Billy marry and they are married against Rose, who is a very, very deeply devout Roman Catholic, and Billy's father, a very deeply devout anti-Catholic. So they go off and get married at a registry office. Billy enters he's called up to fight in the war. And in 1944, only a month after Kathleen's brother Joseph P. Kennedy Jr. is lost over the English Channel, Billy is killed in battle. The book ends with the death of Kathleen Kennedy when she dies in a plane crash on her way to introduce her father to a new fiancé. It's a must-have for any Kennedy lover. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. And that's all.
Is it written like nonfiction or historical fiction?
I would say both. It's a beautiful, beautiful book.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mary Ellen.
And that's all. I don't have any other books.
Well, okay. That sounds like a very interesting book to read. Thank you.
Okay. Now, The Dreamer of Manderley, Sally Rosenthal.
I will never live that down.
I
have two books. They're both from Bookshare. The first one is I'm Your Man, The Life of Leonard Cohen by Sylvie, S-Y-L-V-I-E, Sims, S-I-M, could be two M's, S. If you're not from the 60s or the 70s, Leonard Cohen was a Canadian poet who became a singer-songwriter. You probably have heard his song, Suzanne, covered by Judy Collins.
This is
a very, very long book. I happen to be a huge Leonard Cohen fan.
Oh, me too.
And it's about 19 hours, and you learn more about Leonard Cohen than you ever wanted to know, but there's a lot of description about his poetry, his songs, his long-term affair with a Norwegian named Mariana on the Greek island of Hydra. It's very, very well written and researched, and it's the only authorized biography. He gave permission for it to be written and gave sources for it, but he did not want to read it or participate in it. I read it in 2 days. I was just entranced. Then I listened to Leonard Cohen songs for the rest of the week. My second book is thriller by a Scottish writer named Peter May, M-A-Y. It's called Coffin Road. It's a standalone, although he has written series. It begins on an island off the coast of Scotland where the main characters washed up on shore almost dead and has total amnesia. He has no idea what his name is, no idea where he is or why he's there. And as the book unfolds, it's one of those things where you think, oh, I know what's going on. You know, why are there 6 hours left in the book? But you don't know. Just when you think of it figured out, everything changes. Peter May, if you haven't read him, is an excellent writer. And I think this is a book of his that I like the best. Both are on Bookshare. So that's what I have.
Thank you, Sally. Now, Sally, how did you figure out how long the book was? Because my problem with Bookshare, because I read the books on the Victor Stream, they never tell you the length. I never know it's going to end. And I know what the percentages and stuff.
But if you hit the number five, it will tell you what percentage of the book you have read. And I have a pretty good idea of how much time I spend reading each time I sit down. So let's say, for instance, that I've read 40% of it, and I've been reading for, 4 or 5 hours. Well, then I know the book's probably somewhere between 8 and 10 hours. I don't have an exact total, but I know the one about Leonard Cohen because it was also on Audible, and I made the mistake of getting the Audible edition first with a credit, only to find out that that edition was in French. I was a French minor in college, but that was a long time ago. So I returned the book to to Audible and read the Bookshare edition. So that's all I have.
I don't know if you, I mean, one of the ways that I listen to Bookshare books, and it's more complicated, is I choose the audio version, which is different than the version that's on the stream. And if you use that version, you have to manually transfer it from your computer to your SD card, but on that version, it will tell you exactly how long the Bookshare book is. So it's much more work, but for some reason on the audio version, but not the version that you get if you download it directly on your stream, that version tells you the exact time period of the book.
Or if you're using your iPhone with VoiceStream Reader, it'll tell you exactly how long the book is at the bottom of the screen. So lots of way to determine, or you can use algebra like Sally did to calculate it. Okay.
Well, I don't have a computer or an iPhone, so.
Right. Yep. Yep.
I have to read my Bookshare books the way I can read them on the stream.
Yeah. There you go.
But I still love Bookshare and I still love the stream.
Liz Lindsay.
Oh, Alan, I just wanted to say one more thing, if you don't mind. I also want to second John's recommendation of An American Marriage. It was outstanding. It's one of the best books I read last year.
It was a beautiful written book.
Very nice.
Yeah.
An American Marriage. All right. Good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can I say one thing? That there's also another Daisy Dalrymple series who also has an Alex Fletcher. I'll report on that next month.
Okay. Liz.
Okay. A few months ago, we read for the Mystery Book Club the first in the Stan Connors mysteries, Needing to Die. So I have been working my way through the series. They are all on Bard. The first five are read by one narrator, and the last two are read by a male narrator, which was a little disconcerting at first because in the annotation, when you download them in groups, there's like the book, you know, the first download is 1-3, and then you've got 4 and 5, and then you've got 6 and 7. So that would be, you know, and in the 6 and 7 annotation, they still credit the same narrator. So when all of a sudden this guy, Tinsley, I think is... His last name is. Anyway, but you get used to him. He's not a bad reader. So Stan Connor is, she's just in the beginning of the book. She's moved. She's left her job. She's dismissed from her job in public relations, which was a very high paying, high power position. And she escapes to a small town in Connecticut called Frog Ledge. And so as she comes to town, we find out she has one cat named Nutty, who's a Maine Coon. I will tell you that by the end of the series, her family grows significantly with both dogs and cats. She makes holistic food for her cats and dogs and treats. My only problem with the series is it gets a little preachy, and I am a kind of a traditional cat mama. My cats eat canned food and they eat kibble and they go to the vet and get their vaccinations. And, you know, so there's a lot of, you know, oh, that stuff is so bad for your pets. And, you know, you should make all their food for them or have somebody else do it for you. And, you know, these people are purchasing these monthly meal plans. Okay. That's a small part of the series. It just annoyed me a little bit.
Yeah, because they're basically murder mysteries, aren't they?
Yes, they are murder mysteries. What I like about the book is the character development is really great. And as the series moves forward, relationships change. Relationships are healed, especially with Stan, between Stan and her mom and her sister. And the townspeople are just quirky enough to be interesting. And the series is wrapped up rather nicely. I think one of my kind of pet peeves with longer series, which this was not one of them, is they tend to milk the series, like the Stephanie Plum series. Just goes way too long, you know, wrap it up, guys.
Right.
This one wraps up and you're still wanting more. You know, so I liked that. And, you know, if I finished up a series and I would welcome another one, I think it's a successful read. But I do like it. I like the character development in it. It sounds like a lovely place to live.
It idealizes small town life, which is one of my soft spots too.
Yeah.
Who's the author, Liz?
Oh, I'm sorry. They are written by Liz McGovero, M-U-G-O-V-E-R-O. And she also wrote another series called The Cat Cafe Mysteries under the name of Kate Conte, I think it is. Kate with a C, Conte. But none of them are on Bard. And I couldn't even find them in Bookshare. So they're hard to find. They might be purchasable through, you know, Kindle, but... Right. I don't know if we want to do that.
Some of them are on Audible.
Pardon?
Some of them are on Audible.
Yeah.
The Stan Connor books are good. I really enjoyed them.
Good. Yeah, I liked it. You know, I could see myself down the road, you know, if I want to go back to something familiar, rereading them. They're just, they're nice. They're sweet stories. They're not mushy. They're, you know, you've got a lot of interest going on and, you know.
And humor too.
And humor. So I don't have the DV numbers because there's seven of them, but it's under Liz McGovernall, and they're the Stan Connor, or they might be called also the Positively, P-A-W-S, Positively Organic.
Wait, organic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what they're listed under. Yeah.
Right. So Positively Organic, the first one in the series is Needing to the Die. And I just had a lot of fun with them and I wanted to recommend the series.
And I believe it's spelling. I believe it's spelled K-N-E-A-D-I-N-G to die, maybe.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, that's
right.
It is. Yeah, as many cozy mysteries do, they come up with these cute names for each of the books, you know, Needing to Die, and A Brisket, A Casket, Icing on the Corpse, you know, so things like that. Kind of fun names, but I like it because it's not.
And there's some funny stuff, like when she has to put on a wedding for two dogs.
Some of the stuff is a little over the top.
You always read about these. Well, you know, they have those bakeries that just make dog biscuits and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, people are spending an awful lot of money on pets when they choose not to have children.
Yeah,
a little bit carried away with treating their pets like their children, or you know. And I love my guide dogs. Don't get me wrong, and I love animals in general. And I've raised a child that believes that she likes animals better than people, and she says it's my fault.
Right. Is that all your books, Liz, or do you have more?
That's all I came to talk about because I finished the series. There's seven of them. So I'll have a different one next month.
Okay. Well, I've called on everybody else. Now I'm being an agent on behalf of Shelley Kane, who couldn't come today. And let me tell you what two books she recommends. Let's see what we got here. Before She Knew Him. And I don't know if yet. Shelley really likes psychological thrillers, I think, is and this is a suspense fiction. Let's see, it's by Peter Swanson.
Thanks for using it for the cast of Ariana. If you've got a minute, we'd love to know how
94,518. And I would like not to be hearing somebody else's talking stuff in the background while I'm trying to talk, please.
Sorry, that was me.
Okay. Let's see. 94,518. And I, you know, y'all can look it up. I'm not going to try to read the annotation that she provided. That's the first one. The second one is Then She Was Gone. And she did not give me a DB number for this one. It's by Lisa Jewell. And it's another, she says it's listed as, it's under family, but she considers it a suspense kind of fiction as well. So those are Shelley's two recommendations. And now for my recommendation, I'm a big Stephen King fan. And if you like Stephen King, read Later. The DB number is 102648. This is like a 6.5 hour investment. It's the narration's very well done. And the main character is a boy. I just love Stephen King's books that feature kids because he just does a good job telling the story. And this guy can talk, this kid can talk to dead people. So it sounds like the movie The Sixth Sense, but a lot of the stuff that results is because of some of his conversations with dead people. One in particular who's blowing people up. And then he talks to this guy. To try to find out where this guy's last bomb is going to be. It's a really good story. It's not a long investment in time, and it's got Stephen King's great ability to tell a story. So I highly recommend it. It's called Later And the DB number is whatever I said. 102648. And that's all I've got.
So, I second that recommendation. It was a good book.
Yeah. So, does anybody else have any other comments? Joni, anything else you want to say?
Yeah, well, I just want to say that today's meeting was really, really good. There are a lot of books that I want to read. But I want to talk a little bit more about this Lindbergh book. I'm sorry I didn't get the DB number. This woman really went very deeply into Lindbergh's life, his personality, and the whole kidnapping and the eugenics thing. This man was totally evil, and he had so much power over the country. There were difficulties later because he believed, well, he was one of Hitler's, he believed in isolation, and he believed that, and he believed in vivisection. Can you imagine having your own son killed because he was not the perfect child that Lindbergh wanted, expected, and he was, and Lindbergh was jealous, and he made his wife go on all kinds of flights and made her learn to be a pilot. And they would go on very long trips and leave the child when he was little. And when the child needed a mother's caring and cuddling and taking care of, although in the early 30s, it was frowned upon to pick up your child too much. And it is just such a, and the, and this is one of the books where the notes are included in the book, and they're not, you know, they exist there. And it is such a, I mean, this woman really did a lot of research, and I just have 3 more hours to read, and it's just a fascinating book. And there is another book about the Lindbergh kidnapping. I don't know the name of it, but I plan to read that too, because I had read a novel years ago called The Pilot's Wife, and it was about Lindbergh, and it was partially, well, it was an historical novel. So I wasn't sure what was true and what wasn't. But he, another thing about him was that he had, I think, 7 other children. He and Anne had a bunch of kids, some of which were not perfect. And he had other families. I think he had 7 other children with 3 mistresses in Germany.
Okay, Johnny. I gotta go, folks. It's after the hour.
Sorry.
That's all right. We had 13 people here today. What do you want to say, quick, Sherry?
I was just going to say there's a book by Philip Roth that's total fiction called The Plot to Destroy America. That's about if Lindbergh got elected president. And it's very good.
That's very good, too.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
no, that's great. Right. Thank you. I wasn't aware of Lindbergh and all of that stuff. I did, you know, I just hadn't given it much thought. I think some people still think he's a very heroic figure. So this is a good bit of research, it sounds like.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thanks,
everybody.
Alan. Thanks, right, everybody, bye. For coming.
Good night, John. So thank y'all for coming.
Good night, John.
Catch y'all next time.
Good night, Johnny.
Bye-bye.
Good night, John. Thanks for coming.
Bye.
September 11th.